This week's episode is going to be a special throwback collaboration. For those of you that didn't see on LinkedIn, I recently sat down with my old boss, Sean Anderson, the co-founder of Hoxo Media. Between us, we have easily interviewed 500 plus successful recruitment founders on both of our podcasts. So we thought, why not? Let's put our heads together, let's compare notes and discuss what we have found to be the most common things we've seen in the successful recruitment founders that we've interviewed. So here are some of the things that we discussed together. Why the best founders have complete clarity on the type of business they want to build. Why successful recruitment companies are sales organizations. Why successful founders get out of their own way, especially if they want to scale, and so much more. Enjoy this week's episode.
Sean.
Hisham.
This is cool.
It's weird, but it's great. I'm excited.
No, it's nice to, obviously, I know you do a lot of your, I saw obviously you did your some face-to-face podcast in Dubai, right?
Missed it a lot. You remember the studio?
Yeah, of course.
Not the first one, the second one.
What's the
one in the pillbox?
No, I don't think I did podcast in there.
I did though. Don't you remember?
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah,
you remember the room? We did it in like the conference room. That was the end of my. That was a long time ago, right? Yeah. That was the last time I was doing it regularly in a room like this. And yeah, missed it, man. Missed it. So I planned on bringing it back this year to be like this every episode. And just with the baby and the life I've got, it just does not serve me to get out as much as I thought it would. But that'll be the plan at some point. But it's nice to be in your room, mate.
It's nice.
We're doing a collaborative episode, but we've agreed that you're gonna take more of a lead because I think we're in your. It's like I feel like an away team. You're the home team. I've got an away performance. I've got to sit back and watch what the home team do.
All right, yeah, fair. Well, we said, didn't we? Obviously, we caught up at the expo, and we thought, wouldn't it be a cool idea to record something together? And obviously, because of the position that we're in, like if you think about it, collectively. Me and you have sat down with a lot of recruitment founders, let alone have putting aside people we've had sales processes with where we find out about their business, all the networking events that we went to, obviously when we're doing stuff at TRN and all that, like we've met a lot. And we thought it'd be quite cool to come to this episode with notes on some of the things that we thought these people and companies and people that we've met have in common. And then, I guess just see where the conversation goes. I've got here 5 common things in successful recruitment founder stroke companies, but should we define success or like start there?
Yeah, that fits what I said. I put the 5 most successful recruitment founders have the following in common.
Okay, yeah.
But when I say successful, I think that like that is the most important thing. It's not just about revenue and headcount, which is probably where, if you look back to where our podcast started in, you were what, 2017 and I was 2019. Yeah. I don't know, it just felt like a bit of a vanity project back then. It was like, I've got this much money and I've sold for this much and I've got this many headcount. And I think, I don't know about what you think, but I reckon the industry's changed a lot since then. And the post-pandemic world, people's definition of success is varied. And I think success is probably people have achieved or achieving what they genuinely want. That's how I would define it. Whether that's Tom Glanfield and, you know, selling LHI and skiing in the Alps every day. He sent me a picture of his feet with the view of the Alps the other day.
Really?
In his bed, which is weird, but that's Tom. Or it's someone who's running a lifestyle business that's literally loving the fact they can pick up their kids every day. Like, I think I'll touch on different things. I still think those two businesses, by the way, have a similar 5 ingredients. But I think the key to success is it's living the life or creating the business that actually works for you.
Yeah.
Not what other people think.
Yeah, 100%. When I thought about these 5 things, that's sort of how I framed it as well. And I think that is a whole another question and conversation itself, isn't it? Like figuring that out for yourself because it can change, right? I feel like you've been on that journey as well. Like things do change, don't they?
Yeah, well, I think if we look at our life, like if I take our relationship of working together in 2018, we had an office in London. I was living in London. I was running a business that I did enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. I loved what I knew we were onto something.
Yeah.
And I think you knew.
Yeah.
But I was probably running it in a way I felt like you had to run it.
That's a good way of framing it.
I don't remember ever working from home, do you? Like we didn't have that.
No.
We used to trek in.
It was like, if I was like, I'm, I like, You wouldn't be like, you'd be fine with it.
Yeah,
it,
I didn't
but
care.
It wasn't like hybrid working or
no.
like.
You used to track that die out through like the rough estate.
And everyone did, didn't they?
Oh, some of the. I remember Mark Priestley had a fight with someone by the bins over some mechanic with a dog. And I was like, what is going on? But I think I ran it how I felt you had to run a business, which was you had to be in London, you had to get to the office, you had to have teams, and you, everything had to be like so physical and fixed, and you know, you had to get a contract on an office, you had to get all these things. Now I think I genuinely think the pandemic changed my life and changed the way I thought about things, and now the way I've set my life up, there's no doubt I'm happier with it.
Yeah, nice.
And so the business is serving what I want more than I'm serving what I think the business should be. What about you? How would you describe the Hector journey? Or
if I'm honest, I'm always thinking about or trying to make sure that I've got like a clear anchor on like what success looks like. And like for me, I do think it will change over time, but I just like to, I don't know about you, but I like to look at things just within a 12 month window or like at the longest a 24 month window. Like when I'm speaking to Jess about like, where do you want to be and where do you want to go? Like we talk about this year and next year, because like beyond that, so much like anything can change. So I feel like for me with where I am in my life, it's like, I want to, with me being in London and stuff, I think I want to really try and capitalize on that, which is why I want to do things like this face to face or have an office and build that culture. But then as I, if I'm honest, probably as I get older, I'll think about it even more globally rather than locally. I think that's like a Daniel Priestley thing. I've been really digging his content again recently, and like he just puts that global versus local. Like if you think of what you just said, it's a lot more local. Is like,
well,
like,
if
East
I look
London
at my business now, it is truly global.
That's what
right?
I mean.
So today
yeah.
I'm in London because I'm hosting an event. I've got my new mastermind program, my group, and there's two people flying in from New York. There's one flying in from Dubai. There's people coming in from Ireland, like people in Australia in the group that can't make it. But I'm then going to Dubai in October to run an event. And like, yeah, that didn't really seem possible back then.
Exactly, yeah. It wasn't now really, it's way more normal, isn't it? Yeah. So I feel like for me, it's just, I'm really happy with how things are, but I'm very aware that it like now isn't forever. But yeah, I feel like everyone's on their own journey of figuring out what that success looks like. And I feel like once you've got more clarity on that, which is one of the things that I put on this, is like once you've got more clarity on it, your decision making becomes a lot more easier. Do you know what I mean? Like if you know you want to build, yeah, more of a remote first business or whatever, then your decision making around that is a lot easier. Whereas trying to figure out, should we do this, should we do that, it's just a lot more harder.
Well, that was number one on my list. Know what you want to create, because yeah, doesn't matter what it is. There's no right or wrong way, whether you want to have 100 heads or be on your own, whether you want to be in an office, be hybrid. I think it's just knowing that, starting with the end in mind. From your experience, how aware are current founders of that? If I go back to when I started Hoxo and the people I know started around me, I don't think you thought about much more than the first year, right? You didn't really think beyond just making money and not working for somebody else. Do you think it's still the same now? Or do you think people are sitting down and writing more like business plans and thinking about their that bigger picture from day one?
Probably not. I'd still say not as much as maybe. If I'm honest, I feel like what we're talking about now, business owners probably know they should do it. But it's just hard, isn't it, when you're in like the trenches and you're looking at your cash flow or you haven't done a deal for a while. But I'd probably say there's probably more awareness of it now. And like the story, the journey that you've been on, I feel like there's more awareness around different options. And like you said before, if I start my own recruitment business, I'm maybe thinking about, should I get a grad? When should I get a grad in? When should I get him in the office, delivery consultant or whatever? But now when I do speak to founders, I think there's a lot more awareness around, it could just be me, but then I could outsource some of the things and like just more options. But I do think my first one as well, to be fair, that's interesting that you put it as well. But I put, I guess to build on what you said, I put number one, they have clarity on who they are, who they want to be, and they own this within their business. So I don't know if you saw this, but I definitely found this in my conversations, which I feel like people probably wouldn't put on LinkedIn. But a lot of companies like pandered to what they thought others wanted them to be. And I feel like when I spoke to founders when things got shit for them, they're some of the first things that they changed, because they're like, hang on a minute, we've sort of lost our identity because we thought we wanted to be the most engaged. We wanted to be known as like all about mental health and all these things. And like they just get wrapped up in all that, and then they lost like what they actually wanted to be. And then these founders look at their business and go, fucking hell, like this isn't the type of business that I want. That was my first one, to be fair. So I feel like the best founders that I've met with or seem to be a lot more happier or overall more successful is that they actually own that and they don't like pander to what other people want.
What we do is actually helping and hindering that process. It is, because, you know, in a way, we're giving people a view into what all the different avenues available. We're giving them access to people that have done what they want to do. And so the ability to learn and take action. And like, I've been listening to the James Blackwell episode you did.
Yeah.
And it's sparking things in my head that I'm already doing or I'm not doing. And there's positives to that. But the negatives to that is comparison.
That's true, yeah.
So I reckon everyone who listens to you and listens to me looks at the episode and thinks, you know, am I as good as them? Like, that's the first thing that goes to their head. Like, and if they don't, if the decision is not, that can also affect confidence. So it's leaning into what you said. It's knowing who you want to be, knowing who you are, owning it, and constantly going back to that in those moments, because you're going to constantly be comparing yourself. That's just natural. You're going to constantly come up against, meet competitors at events, be in communities, listen to podcasts, learn, beg, borrow, steal. All those things are great, but keep going. Especially when you feel like imposter syndrome or you feel like inferior, it's like sitting down and going, you know what? I'm actually on the right journey. I'll give you an example, right? So listen to George Heaton's podcast with Stephen Bartlett. Have you listened to that one from Represent? Yeah. Fucking wicked, right?
Yeah.
And I'm probably listening to about 60% of the episode thinking, I am shit. Because he's like, you know, his numbers are insane. 100 million. It's so impressive. And then he starts talking about his relationships.
Yeah.
And he talks about how he can't handle a date. And he can't handle...
Well, he didn't want to call the person who's with a girlfriend.
Didn't want to call his girlfriend, couldn't handle a date, hasn't ever worked for him. And I thought, you know what? That might make him happy the way he puts 99% into work and he can't sustain a romantic relationship. But for me, my wife is so important. Like, the relationship I've got with my wife is incredible. I'm genuinely so grateful. I didn't have it with my ex, and you know that. I've seen the bad. I've now got the good. And like... I'm like, I left the episode thinking I'm winning.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm living the life. It actually reinforced why I make certain decisions. Like, I'm not coming down to London all the time because this morning I felt it when I left my wife and my daughter and my stepson and stuff. And so know what you want to create. Be prepared that people are going to push you into different directions and people are going to sell you stuff and people are going to inspire you to do things. And that's okay as well. But keep sense checking it back to what you said you want to do.
And then just to make it practical then, how often do you find yourself doing that? Because I'll be honest, if I don't do that for a little while, that's when I probably struggle the most.
Mental health.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm like, because you just get obsessed with like how things could be better, the challenges at hand, all that. But whenever I haven't had that moment to go, no, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, these are the sort of goals and what I want to create, you do instantly feel a bit lighter and have a bit more clarity.
I try and do it now nearly every day.
Yeah, fair.
Nearly every day. Because, like, think about the amount of people I'm working with, and you probably are, but if I look at my client base, they all think, like, they're shit on LinkedIn compared to other people. You know, it's one of the things they always say, like, I'm not as good as him. And I'm like, why do you care? So I'm telling them to go, put that in a box. Look at, you've got 2,000 connections now. You want to get that to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6. And within that, you want to educate them, nurture them, engage them, and turn that into more business, right? Because someone else has got 30,000, that doesn't actually change any part of what you've got to do. And so I'm very good at giving that kind of advice. And then I've got to give it back to myself.
It's a lot easier to give it, isn't it?
Yeah, and when like Alex Hormozy's content, I love it, but I actually have to turn him off because it messes with fucks my ego. I'm like this little peanut compared to him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And Bartlett can do that. These people can make you feel so crap, but then you've got to come back to, I actually like my life and I'm still living my dream right now, right? So yeah, it's a daily thing for
me.
I think that's what the best people do.
Yeah, I agree. What did you put down for number two then?
Number two, I put niche. I put niche that they believe in and I think genuinely the smaller the better. And I don't mean like, that could be a granular individual level if you've got a bigger business. But this feeds into the next things I say. But like, I think, like I listened to James Blackwell, right? And I really like the guy. We met at the event. I'm going to meet up with him in Dubai. And we run quite similar businesses. But I've got a fundamental, I disagree with some of the stuff he said on that podcast. Because like, I think if you're sending out, if you're using email, cold email all the time, I don't think that's the kind of person that your clients and candidates are gravitating to. Like, yeah, they might message you back because someone's just left and you caught them on that perfect day. But for the people we're dealing with that are already good at the job, like I'm not working with like rookies who don't know recruitment. I'm working with founders and leaders of businesses where they're already, they want to get 10, 15% more, you know, and to get to the point where they're on our podcast, they've probably done pretty well, right? They're not, you know. So I think it's having that focus in a niche that you believe in, that like, it isn't about that one email, that one day. There's a bigger picture to it. And you can only really do that, I think, when you see the niche in front of you and you believe and you understand it. Like me and you, like we, I think our job would be infinitely harder if we dealt with different types of businesses in different industries every day.
I don't know how often you've had it, but there's been a couple of instances I haven't actually, I don't think I've had like generalist on the pod over the last 6 to 12 months. There's been a couple of, whenever I see people post like, oh, I was top performer or whatever, I always reach out and be like, look, would you be able to share in your story? And there's a few instances where I saw like the top biller at like Office Angels and these other companies. It makes me so curious. I'm like, so
curious.
Yeah, because I'm like, so, because again, I feel like if you listen to podcasts like this, how many people are you hearing from who are like, have built their success off like being a generalist? Like, I've only had like one or two people, but most of the time it is niche. Whilst we take a short break, I wanted to take a moment to chat to you about one of our amazing partners, Sourcewell, the industry-leading recruitment engagement platform. I'm using myself and I don't know what I would do without it. From building personalized messaging cadences across a variety of channels to automating follow-ups and data tracking straight back into my CRM. It's really made an impact in streamlining my workflow and most importantly, accelerating my sales results. My favorite feature by far is the live feed. By being able to see in real time who's engaging with your campaigns, it enables me to prioritize my outreach with the most engaged prospects, which helps me get way more out of what I put in. So I'm going to be honest, if you haven't got Sourcewell and you're a recruiter, I really believe you're at a disadvantage. To find out more and see the platform in action, make sure you click the link in the show notes and mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast. Because you listen to this podcast, you're going to be able to get access to an exclusive offer. Free 50 phone credits, 50 email credits, which is at the value of circa £500 per user. So make sure you mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast and click the link in the show notes.
But if you're a generalist, it's 100% a process, isn't it? It's just a process. You're selling a process.
That's true, yeah.
Whereas when you, I think you're selling a network when you're a niche. Mm. You're selling a network. Yeah, you've got to run a process, but... Like if I take Carl Winterbottom, who's coming to the event, who I rave about this guy, but he's literally got a waiting list for clients. They have to book in to get a call with him to be able to give him a retainer. Why? It's nuts. But why? Does he send automated emails out? Does he fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
He's literally got the reverse of what he's got. What everyone wants, I think, and it's because he owns that data in an AI space. Like he doesn't step outside of that. He doesn't need to. And I think in the early days, and I've seen this. I don't know about you, but someone will be quite niche. They'll start their own business and then they'll just pick up whatever they can pick up. I get it. You're trying to put fees on the board in year one, but you've got to quickly get back to.
It's hard. It's actually hard to say no. Like,
yeah,
it is like a real thing you have to lean into.
But then if you can't do that on your own, you're not going to be able to do that when you've got teams. And it'll end up being really messy. Whereas if you go, I built my business fundamentally doing this, and I know there's a gap next to me now for this opportunity that I'm not able to service, and I've got someone that's coming in to that's how I think the best businesses grow. They strategically know which markets someone's going to go into, as opposed to going, well, we're busy, so let's throw another head in and we'll figure it out. They're messy. They're chaotic.
I would definitely agree. And I think I would just add, like, as well, the big benefit to that approach as well is just, like, you in the longer it goes on, like, the more powerful it is. Because if you think of all the people that you connect with and speak to, like one of your biggest assets will be your data. So like if in 5 years' time you're still speaking to the similar type of skill set, you'll have all those people that you spoke to over the last 5 years. Because that's what I always find as well. When I speak to people that have been doing it for a long time and then they set up on their own, like just the great people have just got so good at cultivating that community and the people that they've spoken to. Like I spoke to a founder today in preparation for next week and they've been doing the same market for like 10 years. Like that's so good. That's like to have that long-term commitment. So now the people that were junior are now senior and they bring them in, and like there's just that long tail benefit as well of just like building up all that data and the people that you help along the career journey.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
The next one I put kind of does feed the same though. It's brand and community.
Is that fair?
So like I think niche, you can be niche but you cannot really think about the brand and the like. If I look at my brother's experience, right, my brother was a I think he did testing and dev niche. He didn't go outside of that.
Yeah.
But he didn't give a fuck about relationships. Like he wasn't like cultivating a brand. He found a job, he filled a job. It was spot business and it was like, it was aggressive. It was fast paced. He was pretty much $1 million biller in Australia. So he was successful, but he couldn't run the business. You know, he struggled when he set up a business and he didn't want to, he'd burnt out really badly from it because it wasn't a fun way of working. So I think once you get your niche, the best businesses then think brand and community. They think putting ourselves into that, like you said, fostering, cultivating. Content on LinkedIn and the things that I promote, you promote, they're just a different vehicle of what used to be an advert in a newspaper or having a round table. It's the same end goal. It's that you're well known in one space. You're moving people within the same space consistently. You're recycling the same people. You're not having to play catch up all the time and start from scratch. I've literally got a few people who've come to me recently and they're like, I've been running on a business for 10 years and I literally every mandate is brand new.
Really?
I'm like, how the fuck can you do that? Like, that must be draining. And it is. That's why now I'm not touching that from a brand perspective. I'm like, you've got to niche down. If I'm going to work with you, you've got to make a decision and we can go on a journey. But it's that age debate again. You're then going to have to say no to things. But your brand online can't move. I used to say this with you, I think, that it doesn't navigate as fast as you can work. So let's say I give you two jobs today that are different. You can realistically run a process and fill them, but your brand can't move that much. Your business can't navigate that fast. So you're better off being known for one thing. And even if you do the odd role in the background to make money, that's cool. But as soon as you can, just get your time, your effort, your focus all revolved around one thing per desk across the business.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So my second one was I went on a bit of a different angle here, actually.
Go for it.
So this is actually probably more about the person, to be fair, and it'd be interesting what you think of this. So I put, they have a willingness to ask for help or possess the humility to know that they don't have all the answers as they scale, whatever that looks like.
I've put growth mindset.
Really, yeah.
I'd say it's the same thing.
Yeah, which leads to investing in coaches, NEDs, technology, training, just open-mindedness to learning. Like, for me, I don't know how you found it, probably definitely the fact that all these founders are spending time with you tomorrow, like, it just doesn't stop. Like, for me, when I sit down with people who feel like they're really enjoying their work, the journey, they're successful, they feel like just the learning and wanting to get better or trying to get better just never stops.
Yeah, growth mindset. You know, you're always on a journey to improve. If I look at some businesses that, again, they're not... If I look at the clients where I've spoken to on the pod, again, some have got there through just old school grunt and they will get to a point of success financially. But the ones that you tend to meet who are interested in your services and then they don't go with, you know, branding or content or whatever or engage or advisory, it's because they're just not open to change. And they're so fixated on, if I do this one little thing, what will I get tomorrow? It's a short term. And I think that short term mindset is a little indicator of a fixed mindset. So if someone's so obsessed with the pound they make on that one post or whatever, it's an indicator that they've got a fixed mindset. And I think to run a really successful and happy business, you've got to have a growth mindset. You've got to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Some of the stories I hear of, like, the way founders talk to people in their teams just lacks unbelievable awareness. Like, it's horrific.
I don't know. Have you met many people that maybe were in that category but then changed? I don't know. Because I feel like people can change, though.
Something needs to happen, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if
it's usually like your business is falling apart or someone categorically leaves you and you think, fuck, something's got to happen. You know, what do they say? Change only happens when the thought of staying the same is greater, is worse than the thought of making the change. So I think, yeah, it's possible, but a lot of the people I spoke to in like 2020, they're still the same now. Like, they're still like, oh yeah, I might do that next year or I might do this next year. And they're still small and they're still, but again, they don't look happy. I wouldn't say that's not successful. If they love their job and they get up every day and they make 900 calls and that's brilliant, but they're not happy. They're still exploring and they're not making decisions and they're in a psychological loop.
I'll be honest, like, speak about the branding piece for a second. Like, I'm actually like baffled that that's still like a question, if I'm honest. that actually does baffle me. The fact that that's even like, should I, shouldn't I, in today's world? Do you know what I mean? I did an interview with the founder of this AI company, MetaView.
Right.
It's like an AI note-taking tool with like recruitment context, basically. So I don't know if you have one of those note-taking calls that join your meetings.
Yeah, Fathom I've got.
Yeah. So I think it's like, no, it's just like...
Fathom's insane, right?
Yeah, it's so good.
Just click a button, it's in your CRM.
Yeah,
right?
So it's just like, it's just a no-brainer.
Is that they're doing, like Fathom for recruiters?
Basically? Yeah, basically. Yeah. So like, because obviously a lot of it is like the context is where they can... But anyway, the reason why I bring that up is because I think he said it in a really good way, is like, if you're a recruiter or recruitment business and your business is just like a thin layer on top of LinkedIn, like, you're going to be really vulnerable. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So like, I just can't believe that people are still questioning, should I be trying to, yeah, build my brand, connect with more people, be on the radar of more people so I can then take them off of LinkedIn, or like I have more opportunities to connect with people and stuff like that. I just in today's day and age, I just can't believe that's
But what question. It is, it's the people in the businesses aren't like you or me. That's the reality. I actually said it at the expo. I didn't realize how introverted if you look at a recruiter, I kind of thought most of them would be in like the second, like the upper end of an extrovert percentile, but they're not. Like, there's so many in a business that just don't want to change. They don't want to learn something new. They don't really want to talk. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in recruitment? Like, that's nuts to me.
Yeah.
But they're literally like, I don't want to talk about myself. I don't really want to get to know anyone. I just want to go and do my job and get paid. And I want commission. I don't think all them things stack up. Like, they just don't add up. Like, there might be the odd guy that can be super efficient, pick up the phone loads and just get his job done. But most people in our industry want to deal with people, want to open up, want to build relationships. And the fundamental thing stopping you is that people don't know who you are. That's it. That's what's stopping you. Whether you use email, whether you use LinkedIn, whatever you're trying to do, you're trying to make people aware of you. The reason you don't, if you're not busy today, if you're sat and you're listening to this and you're going, we haven't got enough jobs. Well, there's only one reason. It's because not enough clients that fit your market know who you are and want to work with you right now. Not enough. Because you could look at your client list and go, well, there's not enough jobs in that client list. So you haven't got enough. So you need to have more, you need to have a better handle on the amount of clients you've got, the amount of roles that are coming out, and the relationships you've got. Like, you have to focus on that. Equally, like the candidate relationships you're building. But candidates come to you when they know who you are. They respond to your emails when they know who you are. Mm-hmm. Clients want to have a coffee with you when they know who you are. Of course, you've got to do things to get them to know who you are. But that's the bit that people only see one way. You just ring them, don't you? You just send a message. Yeah.
I find it wild.
It's nuts.
If I'm honest.
I think we are so far the other way in terms of growth mindset and, you know, meeting all these cool people, trying to create things. Like, look at your business, my business. They're literally an idea that we've took to reality. We haven't gone and worked for someone and then gone, I'll take that and do it again. We've gone, this doesn't exist. We fancy creating it. That takes a stupid amount of, like, faith. and some people think we're mental.
Yeah. I do think, though, like, as time goes on, it will be a non-negotiable that you have to have like a multi-channel approach personally.
Yeah.
Like, of course, the thing that helps us as well is like we've got stacks of evidence of like the things that you're talking about just plays out.
Yeah.
So like for me, I just feel like when it comes to like being a great recruiter, it isn't like I either do this or that. It's like a bunch of things, right? Just curious then on the second point, just on your own journey, your own business journey, is there anything like recently or over the last 6 or so months where you've either invested in or you're like, you've like having a moment where you're like, you know what, maybe we could do that differently. Just talking about that growth mindset, is there anything recently for you that stands out when thinking about that?
I think there's probably, Fathom was a big one. There's literally a huge one. I think with me, one of the things I was going to talk about as the next one is being able to delegate and being able to know which things you should spend your time doing. I think the best founders do that really well. And I think I can be guilty of struggling with that. Like, I'm still editing the odd video myself and stuff like that I don't need to do. But there's times where like I really get stuck in routines, and I'm good at routines. Like, I actually think if I look at my success, which I've had to date, it's not about being the best at anything. I'm just fucking consistent. Like, I'll knock out a show every week. I'll knock out a post every single day. I'll knock out a webinar every single month. You know, I do my boot camp every single 8 weeks. Like, it's so consistent. I don't waver. There's no negotiation. I am there, right? I don't have sick days. I don't miss things. And I think that's got me where I am. But that doesn't mean you can't look at each of them and think, well, do I still need to do that? And I think I've held on to things a bit too long. And so right now I'm kind of really, really analysing. And over the last couple of months, I'm really analysing what I should be doing or not. And it's fucking mental. Some of the things I've gone.
I'm on a similar journey, to be fair.
I bet.
If I'm honest, it goes into one of my points on here, but I would say that for me, that's one of my big things over the last 6 months is that it is so hard. I was speaking to Jess about this yesterday. Like, it's so hard to, like, the best founders definitely are prioritize the right things.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. It is hard to do.
Yeah. You're constantly making different lists and deleting them and writing again and drawing mind maps and talking to people. And I said on a video the other day, like, no business is ever fixed. Like, never ever imagine that like Hormozy's got it figured out or Joe Rogan or Stephen Ballard. Have they fuck? Like, they're more successful. They've made their money. Great. But if I look at all the founders I deal with and all the people that have been on my podcast, they've got mega problems. mega. There's always loads of things broken that they're trying to fix. Now, the best founders can tell a story that makes it sound perfect. And we're all good at it, right? So that is another thing that I see as one of the most successful founders. They can convey a story. They can convey a story that gets others to jump on board, whether that's team, mates, clients or candidates or all of them. They're usually the most charismatic, really good communicators. You know, they don't need to use... I just think they're really good communicators. And I think that's something that is so powerful.
Yeah. I don't know if you're going to agree with my next one.
Go on.
My third one is they view their business as a sales business. They develop a sales culture, a way of selling, and they sell solutions.
I absolutely agree with that.
Ah, fair. Yeah. I wasn't sure how you feel about that. I don't know. I wasn't sure how you'd like... With the branding piece, how do you feel about... Because like for me, I do think regardless of all of that, it's are you good at, yeah, like you said, communicating, selling?
We'll get back to the episode in just 1 minute, but today I'm excited to talk to you about one of our partners, Firefish, the recruitment CRM that accelerates data-driven growth. The problem with most recruitment CRMs is that they are just a database of records, meaning they become just one of the many tools that recruiters use every day. Like with all systems, the records are only as good as the data being captured. Our sponsors, Firefish, know that for agencies to win faster, data needs to be at the heart of their business, making your CRM the single source of truth. With over 10,000 records created and updated every day and 85% of placements from existing candidates, Firefish enables recruiters to enrich and engage their data, equipping you with real-time insights needed to win faster. To learn more about Firefish and take advantage of an exclusive Recruitment Mentors podcast offer, make sure you click the link in the show notes and mention the Recruitment Mentors podcast when speaking to the Firefish team.
Mate, I'm totally on board, right? The reason I'm totally on board is, I mentioned this the other day, there was a guy in Australia, I won't name him, he did a post about one of my clients, how they, you know, I've talked about how good they are, but the billings he's heard from a rec to rec are actually not very good.
All right. Classic.
I thought that was shit, that was petty, that was a bitchy comment. Mm. But either way, what it made me realise was, one, whatever that person's going through, you know, that person he was referring to could have had a really tough year. There's so much that could have happened. Mm. Horrible move. But I'm actually banking on the fact that that's what my clients are focusing on already.
Fair.
I'm not interested in that bit. Seriously, I'm not here as a sales coach. I don't want to be a sales coach. Mm. Now, there's some strategic sales processes stuff that I do teach in some of my... But really, I'm leaving everyone else to do the sales side. You know, let every other sales coach, everyone in a business... I think the bit that's missing in this industry is understanding how branding impacts it.
Yeah.
But it's still a sales... I mean, my business, if I look at Hoxone now compared to when you were in it, it's a commercial engine. Mm. Literally, 3 members of staff don't have a commercial footprint. There's only 13 of us now. So there's 10 people from sales and customer success. To me, everyone's got a client-focused role where we're selling, we're upselling, we're cross-selling. I actually envy recruitment companies often. I have done over the last few years because I think there's something magical about that. Mm. Something incredible where 90% of the business is front office.
Yeah.
Like that just doesn't exist in other industries, really.
I definitely found this. This was just coming up in all my conversations was like, I just find it time and time again where a lot of founders I speak to, like 80% of their business is literally coming from like 10% of their team. A lot of the companies that, you know, where the market did whatever market you're in, it got really difficult. They looked around their sales floor, no one could sell bar like a few people. Because obviously, again, unfortunately, recruitment founders can be pretty reactive, right? They look at like, fucking, I've got these jobs coming in. Let's get Sean in. You can work on that. Let's pay him a decent salary. Crack on. And then Sean is waiting for the next job to work on, I go, sorry, Sean, I haven't got any jobs for you.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the companies that I've met or the founders that I met that did a pretty good job, I'm sure, you know, we never know truly that they're true numbers. Like,
no, exactly.
But in terms of what they tell me, how they got on.
Do you ever get that, by the way?
What?
I get loads of messages after I've put an episode up.
Right.
From people going, that's bullshit. Have you seen that? Have you checked the company's house? And I get all these messages from other people saying, that is not true what you said. And I'm like, I don't audit what people tell me.
Yeah, I have had that. But
I'm not going in the background going like, oh, you're lying. Like, I genuinely, that's not my intention. It's not to like debunk people's numbers. Like, people want to come here and lie, they can. But most often, I believe people are, you know, the people I'm dealing with.
I think it's our job to like challenge people.
Yeah.
Like if you think,
I love that bit.
Yeah. Like if you're like this person, I feel like they're not being very truthful here. I think it's our job to like challenge them. But I think, yeah, we've got to take what they say, right? But I think the founders that I've met would describe their business as a sales business. And I do feel like when things were really fucking busy, that got lost, I felt like, a bit.
So what you're saying is, does that lean into more of a 360 model or not?
Not necessarily. Just it could, like, I would just say, I just feel like the founders of successful companies, they would have spent time really trying to think about or develop like a way of selling, or like that's important and that's high on, like, this is what we need to make sure that we have. And I don't think every business has that.
But if you think about, like, yeah, the problem we've faced is that they, you know, loads of business just came in off the pandemic influx, and people just thought, well, I've got to cater for it.
Mm.
I don't remember a time in my history in the industry where that happened so quick and ended so quick. So it was a really steep curve that way. So I think people need to learn from that. If you're going to create more of a 180 or, I don't know, 120 model, or whatever the hell people call it these days, where you've got a BD person, and you might even have an account manager and a delivery consultant, you might have that 50-50. If this person is 100% reliant on this, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've mapped out that this person's job is not just to fill a mandate, there's a sales job, there's an account management job, because if you think about it, if this person's bringing logos in and their job is to manage a portfolio of logos and get the most out of that client, you've got that's a sales job.
Yeah.
It's a fucking sales job.
Yeah.
And there's always business, there's always stuff to work on. And if that person is working their absolute balls off, developing, and they've got every relationship and the market is that tight, you'd expect, obviously not in every business, but that some founders would take a risk on holding on to that person because they'd have enough knowledge to say, this is genuinely a pinch point. The clients are saying, hold off, this is a couple of months away and we're back. Whereas when you've got a delivery person who sits there ringing candidates all day and doesn't have any clue what's going on in the clients, they're absolutely disposable. But I think that's also part of the model that people need to accept. I used to work for a company, you know, I worked for Venquist, and Steve Garner was my boss, and he was an incredible mind. He's a bit like Jose Mourinho. Like, that's how I'd describe him. He used to sit in his chair and just play musical fucking... He used to drop little bombs and like wind us up, and he was always playing mind games with you. But he was so clever, and I learned so much from him, and I enjoyed working for him. But anyway, he used to talk about... Because I used to say, like, how many people do we have to hire here for this to fucking... for people to stick? And he was like, we aim to make every single person stick, right? We give everyone, if they get, we used to have like a really strict psychometric test on the way in. And we used to let people, we'd reject them if there was something called a yielder, which was like an indicator that they would, when people said no, they'd back off. If anyone got a red on a yielder, regardless of how much we liked them, we would not allow them in. If anyone had worked in the recruitment and left recruitment and wanted to come back, we would not allow them in. We had like rules and we were strict on it. But I'd still say we had no better... 12 weeks really in depth, we had no better strike rate than 3 out of 10. And he was like, I'm okay with it. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, that's the ratio. Well, we'll live with the ratio. If we can get it to 4, great. But if we know we need 3, if we know we need to get 10 to get 3 great people, then that's what we need to do. And he, again, he thought it through. He understood it and he was comfortable with it. And I think it goes back to the 3 and 2 in the office, or the do I hire internally, do I hire remotely? Mm. It's all the same stuff. It's being comfortable with the decision and going with it for a sustained period of time. The businesses that fail are just like, they're like that.
Yeah,
they're just chop, change, start, stop. Everything's chaotic. They don't commit to anything. You're in basically a constant state of fight or flight in that way. And oh God, I would not want to work in that kind of business.
How do you think about, because what I put under this as well, because I'm sure this has come up in your conversations, I've put, they've productized their service, or haven't got complacent with doing recruitment one way. Because I that also does baffle me as well when I speak to founders or even recruiters, and it is very easy just to work in a certain way, isn't it? But I think if you are really thinking about sales, how can we be better, whatever, you do end up thinking about how do we package up our offers and our services. How do you feel about that? Obviously, contingent, I don't think is ever going to like die or anything, but I am surprised to still speak to so many people that it's like 80% contingent, 20% exclusive or whatever. And I do think, for me, a lot of the successful companies have productized their service. Like, it isn't just, yeah, Sean, if we work together, it's just this one way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there's a danger in doing too many different things, and you go back to losing what got you where you were. But I agree. Like, the best businesses are thinking, how do we wrap up customers? How do we create solutions? How do we create retainers? How do we create upfront payments, monthly recurring revenues? Mm. So again, it goes back to that growth mindset, doesn't it?
That's what I mean.
It's
the
same thing. It's the same. Everything we're touching is touching the same thing. So if you go back where you know what you want from the business, you know which niche you want to serve, and you own that community and brand, you're aware enough to delegate and bring the right people around you, and then you're always thinking about improvements, and as a result of that, you clever ways of selling to that customer base, and you make it a sales driven organization. I think that's kind of stacking them all together, right? I can think of so many businesses like that, and loads that aren't.
And I think back to what we were saying earlier, one of the, like, if you're a founder and you're listening to this, I think one of the coolest things about being in that seat is, like, you can have an idea and try it on Monday. I think you can really take this to when you're thinking about the problems that your clients have. We started working with a company recently where they had a shit year last year. The founder took a step back, like, right, what do we need to do better? They realized they were working with clients that weren't committed, and they really thought about what are the common problems that these companies have that we work with. And then they basically thought of different solutions to the issue. So, like, when they work with a company in a certain way, they'll do video job specs, they'll do these other things. And, like, if you have any ideas around, oh, that's like the fifth hiring manager who said they struggle with this, or their reputation isn't as good as it should be online or whatever, like, that's absolutely something you can take action on. Like, if you have an idea around how you could potentially add something to your service, like, experiment with it, or, like, ask a couple of people and then go from there. I think that is one of the coolest things. Like, when you have your own business, you can try different things.
Fail fast and...
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
The only thing I would say is, and I've been guilty of this, is you're, as a founder, you can see the future that fast. Like, you just can. You hear something, you imagine the difference, you could implement it tomorrow and it would feel okay. But for your staff, that's frightening.
Yeah, true.
I can be the biggest problem in Hoxo because I'm like, we're doing this. This is the way we're doing it. This is brilliant. And people are like, fucking hell, that was something different 2 minutes ago. Like, and I get a bit frustrated at times when people don't catch up to me come on, you can see what I'm thinking here. And, like, I think I've built a better way of doing that I'm not dropping bombs on. Like, even Ammo would be like, mate, just chill out. Like, we've committed to this. But I'm also good. I'm getting better at getting people on that journey earlier and saying, look, I'm thinking of this for next quarter. What do you think? Getting them bought into the decision. And as I've learned now to do less of that reactive, try it tomorrow, and put it into a 90-day plan.
Yeah.
So I have, like, I've literally been writing, like, my quarter two stuff. We're a bit late as we're already in April, but there's a couple of things I really need to do in this quarter. And there's stuff I can't do. Like, there's other ideas. I just have an ideas, like, dump that I put down. But I think you're better off doing one great thing and a quarter that's new than three things that you do badly and you drop all the time.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. But I just think, just don't forget, like, you don't have to do things just because it's always been that way. Like, if you do think it could potentially be better, like, you can absolutely try that.
Yeah.
So, to be fair, this ties into one of the things you were saying, but the fourth one that I put down was they get out of their own way. Or at least look to do this if they're on a growth journey, or even if they're not on a growth journey, they're still probably thinking about, is this a high leverage task? Or like obviously a bit of a journey you're going on, and I'm thinking about them right now. These successful founders do try and get out of their own way. They don't want to be center of attention, I found personally.
No, I get your point. I think center of attention is slightly different than delegation, I think. Because, like, I can delegate so much that still leads to me being the face of
Hoxo. Right, yeah, fair.
So I think there's two sides to that, but I agree with what you're saying. Like, I think the best businesses make it about the team, make it about the business, but everyone's personal brand contributes to that, and that's important. But the best people I've dealt with, they surround themselves with better, just good people. Like, they know they need a marketing person, an operational person, even if that is a VA or an outsourced partner, or it's a fully fledged team. I think it's very hard to be truly successful and happy on your own. Like, I mean, solely on your own. You don't work with anyone else.
Yeah, that'd be hard.
Fucking lonely for a start. So, like, even if you're on your own, having part of a network, part of having, like, an NED, having there's things you can put around you that help you go on that journey. And I think that's getting out your own way again a bit, because if you leave every decision to you, if you leave every idea to you, if you leave all the execution to you, that's lonely, that's difficult, that's overwhelming.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the main thing is get out their own way, yeah. Like, being centre of attention is definitely different. I think what I was trying to sort of convey
There's two different business routes. Because, like, if I look at Carl Winterbottom, it's very similar to me. It's like the Kyle face is face of Orbition. But you know,
but I think that's a good thing. That's the whole pros like, key personal influence.
Yeah, that's like, its that pros and it. Cons though. Like, you know, because then you're like, how do you get other people around you to be, you know, even looking at me and you, right? Mm. There was a time where people didn't know who owned Hoxo and what you were and I were, and you probably felt that. Mm. Like, if I'm really going to pop off, I'm going to do it on my own. Mm. If we'd have had a better conversation back then, we might have figured out a way of doing it so that we were both in the same business and who knows? But there is, I think there is a challenge at times with the personal brand being just around one person, but there's ways to build it in different directions. Again, it comes down to having a plan of what you want.
I think like, because again, I've been, I literally went to an event recently with a friend and it was like Daniel Priestley and Ali Abdaal, if everyone consumes content on YouTube, you've seen it. But obviously his whole like key person influence thing, like obviously the classic examples are like the, you know, the Richard Branson, all these things. But I do think, I actually really, sometimes you can hear people say the things that you're saying around like, oh, I don't want to be the face of the brand and these types of things. But actually, if you are a key person of influence, the way that Dan said it on some content recently was just like, you're, as a key person influence, you shine the light on other people.
Yeah.
It's not about having the light shined on you. So if you are this huge brand and we're talking about, yeah, building a brand, these things, if you're a successful founder, you would have got out your way in the sense of like, if I might really buy into Sean and what you're saying, but then when I start working with your business, you'll have exceptional people. Yeah. That, do you know what I mean?
That's what about. I think now. I'd say when you come and work with Hoxo, the standard doesn't drop. Like years ago, and you, I think me and you were on the front and there was teams in the back. And even after you, before you, where you're like, yeah, they probably wasn't as good as we were, you know, we were hoping for. And the people felt a bit like, I've just met Sean, I've just met Hisham, I've just met Amma, and now I'm not quite sure it's the same standard. Whereas I'm like, I'm fucking so confident. I've got this like rock solid team of, and we all have different parts to play. But the key person, I mean, look at the key person of influence. Like if you, I've say this repeatedly, if you build a business in your underpants, the old joke, but you've come from being a biller to a founder on your own, you build it up. The relationships you've got to build in those first few years to get that business to the point where you can hire and you can train and you can put the spotlight on everyone else, they are golden. Mm. They're the first people that took a chance on you. Now, what most founders then do is they sit in the background and they think it's all about everyone else. So they go quieter and more internal and more internal and more internal. And I get that. You put in all the relationships into other people. You're future-proofing the business. You're building processes. You're building something that's robust, built on a company name, not you. But why can't you do that as well as having an element of being a key person? Like, why wouldn't you still nurture and reach out and have some form of market engagement? Because you've got the most stories, the most gravitas, the most history in the market. People want to meet the founder, they want to interact with the founder. Like having a podcast is the single best thing I think a founder can do in a recruitment company, because like they can still interview loads of clients and do loads of stuff, but having no actual work to do, this isn't fucking work, this is great fun. Do you know what I mean? So like, and Daniel Priestley, like there's no way Daniel Priestley's doing the detail in his business.
Nah.
But he's phenomenal at the message. And I think most great founders had to be phenomenal at the message to get to the point where they built people around them. They just forget about it and they put it in the back burner and they turn it, they think it's something that's not for them anymore.
I do think that is the right way to think about it, because then, like, then it's just all about leveraging that to help move the business forward. If that's because of that, you're then able to get into rooms where you can get investment, or you're then in rooms to help close customers, or yeah, like that's how you then leverage that. You're still, it's not all revolved around you, like still the business name, whatever. I just feel like, yeah, again, with the, if you think about the people that we've mentioned in this conversation, the content that we consume, Steve Bartlett, these types of things, that's absolutely
why
what they're
doing. Why
do
you think Dragons Den exists?
Yeah.
Because they were super successful. They got a huge network. The network knows them, likes them. They put cash in, they build teams, but they add their brand to that team. Instantly, you go on Dragon's Den and Bartlett invests in you, you're going to feel different. You're going to get a different, you're going to get in different conversations. So why wouldn't every founder think, well, I have to be that for my, I have to be the dragon for my business. Do you know what I mean? I have to be that. Doesn't mean I have to spend all day on the phone, but you've got to be strategically the person opening doors and helping others walk through.
Yeah, definitely. But nonetheless, you've definitely got to like be aware of getting out of your own way.
Getting out your own way.
100%.
Because you can't do that if all you're doing is like 9 to 5 billion all
in
the
delivery,
time.
It's
very difficult. Yeah,
100%. So this is my fifth one. I don't know what you put as a final point, but again, this is a bit more around the personal. So I don't know what you think about this. So I put, for me personally, the founders that seem the happiest, energized and excited are those that put their health very high up on their values and are often in good shape. That's just me being really truthful.
Just like, a bit where I get my abs out.
There's just plenty of people, whatever that means, but there's plenty of people, you know, that are successful that aren't that. But like for me, I feel like whenever I sit down with people, meet people who are energized, at, you know, we're talking about being successful.
Yeah.
If you're really trying to work on your health, downstream from that is better relationships, either with yourself, with other people, with your partner, whatever. And like, then you show up better for work. So like, for me, I just feel like that's just the truth. Like for me. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. As you know, I'm your host here, but I'm also the founder of Hector, an all-in-one training platform powered by current top performers. We're on a mission to help thousands of recruiters achieve their potential by providing world-class training delivered by today's top performers. If you're a growing recruitment business that wants an alternative way to upskill and develop your team that doesn't involve having to spend more time doing it yourself or putting the responsibility on your already time-poor billing managers, then you should check out Hector. After successfully implementing Hector in several recruitment companies, we've helped them reduce the time it takes for their consultants to do their first 360 deal, improve important performance metrics like job-to-fill ratios, and even increased the average billings per head by 20% for multiple recruitment teams. You can check out Hector and learn more about how we can help your business and book a call directly with me in the link in the show notes.
Yeah.
I think
it's a bold statement, but you're right. I think the days gone by... There are successful founders that booze all the time and ate crap and cheated on their wives or husbands and did all these things and still built a successful what the industry would recognize as successful. But if we're looking at what we believe is success and what most of our generation now running businesses, it's a circle, it's a proper flywheel. Mm. Like I said, if I look at my life now, my health is number one. You know, I've stopped drinking this year. I'm not drinking in 2024. I go to the gym consistently. I walk consistently. I eat better. I feel like I've got a really rock solid routine. I'm in better shape. I feel different person than I did a year ago. It's 6 months ago. That's then leading to I'm having a better relationship with my wife. She's not drinking either. Like that's since the baby we had postnatal anxiety and we both said, look, there's no booze for a bit. And it's been amazing. But we're now having like, I said to her the other day, like everyone thinks intimacy is sex or whatever. Mm. We're having more quality conversations than we've ever had. And from an I'm not going to go into the details of my sex life, but from an intimacy perspective, when you've had a baby 6 months ago, like you're not like you were perhaps when you first met, mm-hmm. right? Let's just say that. But from a traditional standpoint, but if I look at the intimacy in my relationship and the way we speak and the depth to the conversation.
You feel like more connected than ever.
Another level, mate.
Yeah.
And again, I keep saying to my wife, that booze has been a different game here. Last night, right, I come to London. My stepson is 9 years old. I would say he's been my most difficult relationship in my house for the last 2 years, right? I've lived with him for nearly 3 years and I love the kid, but we've battled. We've been like fucking, there's friction all the time. I've always thought I'm not his dad and he's jealous of me because I'm with his mum. And I love him and we have a good relationship, but it's like a bit like love-hate. Last 3 months, it's been incredible. And I mean it. He was crying his eyes out last night in bed and I was nearly welling up and he's like, I don't want you to go. And I'm like, I've said to Lauren, it's the booze again.
What, because?
Because I'm walking in every day with a miles right. better mind. And yeah. I'm so much calmer. And I'm walking into situations where I would have been like, straight away on him. And I'm like, why am I going straight on him? Let's watch. Just watch. Mm. All right. He's put butter all over the side. But I would have been like, what are you doing? Like, I had these expectations of these 9 and 10 year olds to be like adults and they're not. And I'm actually finding things funny now. I'm like, do you want to butter the fucking fridge as well? Like, but I'm throwing that like line at him and he's cracking up. And I've just disarmed him and I'm like, mate, could we clean this up together? And he's like, yeah. So anyway, so look at my health, my relationships at home, business. Like, I reckon I've operated 10 to 15% better this year, without a doubt. Like, if I look at the numbers we're doing, if I look at the products we're introducing, the changes we're making, at the speed we're making, I've not had a single day where I've gone, oh, I don't feel it. I mean it. I went out, this is a long one. I went to Peru and New York last year in the summer, mm-hmm. got back. I did 6 overnight flights in a week with a 6-month pregnant wife, 2 kids under the age of 10. New York, Peru, back to New York, 6 overnight flights because we flew overnight to New York, overnight to Lima, then Cusco, and then back. It was nuts. So 6 flights, 4 overnight. Anyway, I then land in London, barely slept. She then has to drive the car to Sheffield and I go straight to the cricket for a day at the cricket with England and Pakistan or something. I don't even like cricket, but I just went with the lads drank all day.
You drank all day?
All day.
Yeah.
And I remember waking up the next morning in a hotel in Waterloo where Amma was, you know, we went for breakfast. I swear I felt like shutting Hoxha down.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. Like, I was like, I can't face it. And there was not even anything majorly wrong.
After all that week as well, though.
I was just like, I'm not in this. I don't fancy it. It's like, what are you on about? I'm like, I just can't face, like, what? Anything that's coming right now. And I'm like, fuck. And we were making, we had some redundancies coming up. And I was like, I'm going to fucking make myself redundant. Now, I joke, but I'm like, this year, I'm like, it's nuts. Like, I feel like it's nuts how different every situation is. So, not making it all about me, but like, if I look at the best people I'm dealing with, I went to the expo. Most people are like, I'm not saying they're all sober, but they're like, they're really conscious of what they eat and drink. Like, they're conscious of their training. They're conscious of, like, they're just, yeah, like, it's a proper flywheel.
Yeah, flywheel is a good way to think about it.
And you've got your health, your wealth, your relationships, your business. You know, they've all got a part to play. If you've got no family or relationships, like that George Heaton, he also said his brother was like his best mate. He was like, so, like, that's his relationship, right? So he's got something in his life. For me, I've actually mapped it out. I've written it down and gone, right, this is what I want from my health. This is what I want from my wife and kids. This is what I want from financial. This is what I want from Hoxo. Then I've put a fun thing in there. So I've actually thought about my travel. I know I'm going to Dubai at the end of May. I know I'm going to Peru again in the summer. I know I'm going to Turkey in October. I haven't booked them, but I know where I'm going. I'm going to Marrakesh on Friday for a 4-day. Like, why not? Like, so I know another guy who runs a business. He said, I've not been on holiday since I set the company up 6 years ago. His kids have not been outside the country since he set his business up.
Yeah, that's wild.
And he's not saying that like, because he wants that, but that's what he felt he needed to do when you're an entrepreneur. And I'm like, I don't think you do. Mm. And I think the best people are like Leo Harrit. Do you know Leo? Do you know from Chapter 2?
Yeah, I remember him.
You look at his Instagram, mate. Fucking, I think he's in Barbados right now. Like, the guy is always away. I'm like, how the hell does he run? His business is flying because he's got everything on our list. Everything on our list is locked in and he's able to go and enjoy it, and he's not waiting for a payday when he's 60 and he's bloated. He's doing it now.
But yeah, I do really believe that. I think, again, like, everyone maybe arrives at putting it higher on their value list at different moments, but I do think over the long term, if you're going to be successful, happy, you're going to start thinking, looking in the mirror going, I need to put my health up there.
What is it about you then? Because you, when we met at the expo, you said you've not drank this year, or you haven't drank for a while.
Yeah, so
you used to just consume avocados and drink the odd.
Yeah, I've always been pretty health conscious. I put on weight really easily, so like sometimes I'll like fluctuate pretty easily weight wise. But I've always been fairly health conscious throughout my 20s. But I had my time when I worked abroad in Magaluf and those days and all that. I've had my fair share of sessions, but I guess leading up to being 30, I turned 31 this year in March, like leading up to turning 30, I didn't drink a whole lot, but when I did drink, sometimes I'd have like a proper heavy one. And then, yeah, literally the following 3 days, I'm like, what the fuck is, this is shit. This is, yeah, life is bad.
Yeah.
So that, I didn't like that. But if I'm honest, the main thing was, it would more be like the casual drinking would just lead to bad habits. So like, I don't know about you, but again, I'm just like a real foodie. So if I have 2 pints, 3 pints, my mind is going, can I get a McDonald's on the way home? Yeah. That's what I'm thinking about. So then I'll wake up, I won't feel amazing. I know I've eaten a McDonald's. I'm like,
you can taste it.
And I'm just like, I just feel shit about myself. So,
and when you are the founder of a business and you're trying to, you've got so much responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it was just like, I just like the idea of not drinking once turning 30. And it just didn't match up with like the type of person that I wanted to be or the habits that I wanted to be. And then if I'm honest, it's been a bit more of a switch for me rather than like I've counted every day and these things. But I don't know, it's just been a bit of a switch. And it, for me, it's more that I just don't have any days where I wake up like that you described. Yeah. Like I haven't had any of those days for a year.
Do you know many, I'm not naming them, but do you know many recruitment owners that you would say are still in that, they're doing really well and their growth, but they're still like boozing, tanking. They kind of like, they're burning the candle at both ends. Do you still see as much of that?
I'd honestly say like less so personally. I do think people just go on their own journey with it. Like, I feel like most successful people that I've met, they might have just had that back-to-back session. They're like, nah, I'm done. So I do think, if I think of like the last number of people that I sat down with, founders, like, yeah, probably less so, if I'm honest.
Well, I've got 20 people coming to this event, and I think 50% of them, because I told them all, like, I'm not going to be drinking, but you know, I'll be taking you out for dinner and whatever. Mm. And they were like, yeah, I don't drink, or I'm not drinking at the moment, or I'm on it. You know, it's like, it was like a normal thing. Mm. Whereas I'm going on a stag in May to Lisbon with 40 lads from Manchester I grew up with. And I've still not told him I'm not going to be drinking. And I'm like, how's that going to go down? Like, I don't even know. Probably, if any of them listens to my shit, I don't think they do. But if they do, we'll deal with it when we get there.
But I do think it's up there for sure. What was your fifth one? Did you touch on
that? I put a personal balance, personal and work and life balance that works for them, like a conscious balance for them, which I think...
So you're talking about the exercise you sort of do for yourself, being aware of it.
Yeah, aware. I think awareness is key to it all. And I think... I listen to a lot of Andy Ramage's stuff at the minute. Do you know him? The One Year No Beer guy. He was on that Rangan Chatterjee podcast last week, and he does a lot in the alcohol free space. And he says it's like when you're drinking, you're in the jar, and you have to get out the jar to see what's on the label.
That's a good way of putting
it. When you read the label, you're like, fuck. And like, I genuinely feel like, not just with booze, but in general, in like all areas of my life, like awareness is reading the label. Do you know what I mean? It's like picking up something that you just go, I'm going to drink that. I'm just going to eat that. If you read the label, you might make a different decision, but you need to be aware enough to read the label. And that can be pretty, as a metaphor for every part of your life. Questioning, do I really need to do this? Should I do this? What benefits is going to give to me, going to give to the business? I think awareness is key.
Yeah.
And most of the best, the best people have it in abundance, I think.
Again, I feel like if you maybe not as self-aware right now, you can absolutely get there, right? And you can be on a bit of a journey with that. What do you think, though, about... So I definitely agree with that, but at the same time, what helps me is sometimes thinking about just, like, being in, like, periods. So, like, there will be periods where I'm like, I'll speak to Jess or whatever and make sure we're on the same page. I'm like, right, this month or this quarter, I'm definitely going to have to put some extra hours in. Like, it's what, like... is needed from me or what I feel like I need to do. These are the reasons why. But then making sure, being aware of that, so communicating that, but then also being aware like, okay, well, so because of that, I'm going to have a bit more late at nights, but then when we have this time together, we do that, like it's our time and like that's got to be protected. Like we've got to talk about that. But how do you feel about, there's an interest in communication about working hard now, I feel like. It is often, people do shit on it, I think. It's like, if you say, oh, I'm working really hard or... I'm grinding it out these
days. Alex Elliott does a lot of content about that, doesn't he?
Like, I feel like it's got weight to it now, almost.
Well, you could say that there's an element of the work-life balance thing is so far one way that, it's demonized just going for your goals and working like a lunatic. But I think it all comes down to what you want. Like, you're only going to work that hard if you've got a strong enough why. Mm. Like, you do. Like, if you've got a real why to... make a certain amount of money, like you're gonna have to put the effort in. You have to, I know, like I say, this week with this event coming up, I've been working long days and said to Lauren, like, I'm going to Marrakesh with her on Friday afternoon and my phone's off till Monday night when I get back. Like, I'm not gonna be on it at all. And I've told the team, I'm not speaking to anyone. But she's had to deal with me probably being mentally a bit vacant this week. But again, I would have probably gone through a period in the past where I'd not mentioned it.
Right.
And I'd just done it. And then then there's an issue. And I think...
Yeah, I was bad at that.
Again, one on top of the five, which again comes back to the awareness, but it's like the level of rigor that really good business owners put into their business. Why don't you just put that into different parts of your life? Like you sit down every week and you have a management meeting and you talk about risks and issues and goals and targets and your aim is to get all the shit out on the table so that there's no surprises, right? Yet, I ask this on my podcast a lot. Do you have that with your wife? And the amount of people go, nope. You know, and the odd one says, yeah, I do have a really clear line of communication. I think that, again, it's, do you have that same level of dialogue with yourself when it comes to your fitness goals? And like, do you plan it out? Do you talk about it? Do you have a coach? You know, my alcohol free journey, I've got someone, Keith, who I speak to, and I meet him every single week and he's a mate and I'm giving him advice on his business. He's giving me advice in that. And it's, without him, I wouldn't be where I am. I've not got a PT. I've had one. I've actually had an online coach that I've been working with. And I think it takes awareness and conscious effort to know what matters to you and what you need to do to get to it. And when you're 25 and single, living in Clapham, you can work 12-hour days without pissing anyone else off. You've got no responsibilities. You can do it. And I think these people should go out and do it. If they really want to become the best, I think recruiters in their 20s who don't have loads of responsibilities, they should be going for it. They should be putting in extra hours. They should be working smart and hard because then you're on. But you want to put those hours in so that when you do reach the time which you're arriving at, which I've arrived at, where you get married and you have kids, you've got to make a really bold decision. Do you want to carry on being away every night of the week? Like the amount of founders I speak to that say they didn't see their children grow up. To me, that's not success. For me. For them, it might be, and they're happy with it. But having a baby now, there's no way I'm missing out on her childhood for an extra few million on a payday. Like, it's not happening. I will earn enough to have an amazing life and see her. That's my, I've got that in my, ingrained in my brain. But it's awareness, right?
Yeah, it does come down to that, doesn't it?
But the guys who sacrifice their kids' childhood and go, I'm glad I did it.
Mm.
That's fine as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's fucking sound. Like, why do we have to tell people not to do things? Like, I think awareness, it comes back to everything is awareness. I think that's the number one area that we think all the best people we've come across have got really good self-awareness. They know their weaknesses, they know their strengths, and they take action and move forward.
Love it. I think that's a wrap there, mate. That's our five.
That's our five.
I'm happy with that.
Enjoyed that. It's good. See you again next week now.
Let's go.
Nice one, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope there were plenty of golden nuggets for you to take away. As you'll know, I'm your host here of the Recruitment Mentors podcast, but I'm also the founder of Recruitment Mentors. We're an online subscription-based learning and education platform. We're on a mission to help thousands of recruiters achieve their professional goals and successfully progress their careers through modern and engaging online learning. So if you're a recruitment business owner listening to this, there's a good chance that you value self-development, personal development. You're trying to develop a culture of continuous improvement. But we've partnered with a number of grown recruitment companies who were struggling to understand how they can invest more in their people, how they can upskill them more quickly without spending more time, without having to spend thousands of pounds of external trainers. And we've ended up being a really great fit, modern fit for recruitment teams. We can ultimately help you get more out of your teams by giving your people access to modern and engaging online learning, which they can access on demand. The thing that's really cool about what we're doing at Recruitment Mentors is that all of the people that your teams are able to learn from and the people that are delivering the learning content are people that are in role right now. They're billing, they're actively facing the challenges that your teams are, and a lot of the time they're amongst the top performers within their companies, which means your teams are going to be way more confident to learn and spend time on their learning when they know they're learning from people that are doing it right now, have been there and done it. There's nothing worse than feeling like training is not relevant and not current. The best place to find out more about Recruitment Mentors and if we can help you accelerate your team's performance is send me a message on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn directly, and I'd love to connect with you and find out if we can help you get more out of your people.